From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is Radio Times. I'm Tracy Matisak, in for Marty Moscoane. Just 3 years after the near collapse of the U.S. auto industry, Detroit's Big Three are back in the game in a pretty big way. They're recovering lost market share, and General Motors has even reclaimed its position as the world's number one automaker. Sounds like a comeback, but is it? This hour, we're taking a closer look at the U.S. auto industry and how it's really doing post-recession. Then a little later, we'll kick the tires on some of the featured rides at the Philadelphia Auto Show. Mark Phelan is the auto critic for the Detroit Free Press, and he'll separate the standouts from the so-sos when it comes to this year's auto offerings. But we begin with the Big Three and Mickey Maynard. Mickey is a contributor to the Forbes.com blog called Voyages, and she's senior editor of Changing Gears, a public media project exploring the invention of the industrial Midwest. She is the author of The End of Detroit, How the Big Three Lost Their Grip on the American Car Market. Mickey, welcome to Radio Times.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, you have written extensively about Detroit and the Big Three, and certainly there's been a lot of encouraging news that's been coming from Detroit lately. Would you call it a comeback?
Well, I think it's better than it was. And I think what we have to do is define the word comeback. Are we coming back to where the auto industry was last decade or in the 90s when they were clearly dominant? I don't think that's the case. I think what we're seeing is that because of the bankruptcies, General Motors and Chrysler got rid of a lot of overhang, a lot of debt, that kind of thing that was holding them back. Ford has gotten their financial act together, and so they're in good fighting shape. But what they're fighting is a car market that has changed significantly over the last 10 years.
Hmm. Is it your opinion, Mickey, that the Big Three have been able to keep up with those changes?
Well, here's the thing. What happened to them while they were in the deepest trouble was that their counterparts, like Toyota and Honda, also got in trouble. So in a way, Detroit's been lucky because the companies that they've been competing against also suffered their own problems. So everybody's sort of on a level playing field here. What did happen, though, was that the European companies got stronger and the Korean companies got stronger. So Korean companies, European companies, they're all building cars in the United States now. They've had an opportunity to really work on their operations and their quality. So Detroit is coming back into this market fighting competition from every direction, not just from Japan.
And you've written about how American automakers are having a terrible time trying to catch up with the European car makers, particularly in the luxury arena.
That's right. It's interesting to see because in the last decade, Infiniti and Lexus and Acura really were ruling the luxury car market. You know, those companies were invented to fight the Europeans and to fight Cadillac and Lincoln, and they pretty much took over the American luxury car market. And now you turn around and you see that BMW and Mercedes-Benz and Audi have now gotten their act together, and they're actually leading the car market. Cadillac comes in behind both BMW and Mercedes in terms of sales, and Lincoln is pretty far behind just about everybody.
Although I've been reading, and we'll talk about this a little bit later with Mark Phelan, that there is a new Cadillac that is supposed to be Cadillac's version of a BMW 3 Series.
That's right, and I think Cadillac is a good success story for Detroit. It's taken a long time. I mean, if you go back and read some of the old articles, they've been working on fixing Cadillac since the end of the 1990s. So it's taken them about 15 years to be competitive with the German automakers. And what they're finally doing is developing a small, what they call an entry-level luxury car that can compete with the 3 Series BMW, which is their biggest selling car essentially in the world. You have to beat the 3 Series or at least race with the 3 Series in order to be a success as a luxury car maker.
It seems, Mickey, that even before the recession, kind of the knock on American-made cars was quality, that there was a perceived, real or perceived, lack of quality there that the foreign cars seemed to have. Is that still a concern, in your view, for the Big Three?
You know, I think it's less of a concern at General Motors, and actually Chrysler has been improving their quality, but some of the more recent quality surveys are showing that Ford is still lagging behind. And I think this will keep Ford from having the big comeback that they really claim that they're having and that they would like to have, because the way that Detroit lost buyers in the 90s and in the last decade was because the cars were not as good as the Japanese automobiles. The European automakers have never been as good as Detroit is on some of these quality surveys, but their driving characteristics, and Mark Phelan from the Free Press can tell you a lot more about this than I can, but they have the kind of driving characteristics, the way they feel on the road, that their buyers like, and so people are willing to overlook some quality glitches. That's not the case for Detroit. Detroit is coming back from sort of a lower ditch here, so the eyes are always on them in terms of quality.
Just in thinking about Europe, Mickey, and the economic instability that's going on there, what does that portend for European car makers as opposed to American car makers?
Well, here's the thing with the Europeans. There's the financial crisis in Europe, and we have to all watch to see what happens to their operations over there, what kind of money that they'll have to spend on new products. And then you also have to watch, the Europeans might laugh to see people say that they have to watch out for the Korean automakers, but Hyundai is making cars that sell $60,000. And so they have to watch out for everybody. And for them, with a shaky economy in Europe, with currency issues, with the future of the euro, in question, I think there's even more pressure on the Europeans than there is on anybody else.
One contributor to Forbes wrote recently that Detroit may be riding for a fall because, aside from the government aid that it received, the original problems in the industry weren't completely addressed. Is that a fair critique?
Well, yeah. I think you can say that the car makers needed the bailouts because of their labor situation, because of their big debt overhang, because they had all these operations that they had to get rid of. But I would say another thing. I mean, the whole point of my book, The End of Detroit, was that Detroit had lost touch with the American car maker. And you can't just sort of clean up the attic and come back and say everything is fine. You have to really get back in touch with American consumers. And I think the big issue that they face is that American consumers have so many choices. Mm-hmm. I did some calculations for my blog on Forbes.com, and people are walking around the auto show saying the 90s are back. Well, back in the 90s, Detroit had 70% of the car market. Now the three Detroit companies have under 50% of the car market. So they can get their act together in a way that they think is sufficient, but they have to get their act together in a way that compares with everybody else.
Yeah. What are American consumers looking for, Mickey, in their car choices? I mean, what does Detroit really need to be thinking about as it reinvents itself?
One of the things that's going on now is a lot fewer people are buying cars. So if you look at 2005, 2006, the car makers were selling about 16, 17 million new cars a year. Last year, they sold about 12.5 million cars. So we're down 30%, I would say, because we've recovered a little bit. So when people are making car purchases now, they are looking at vehicles that they're going to keep for a while. You know, there are people leasing, and I think it's great if you want to lease and turn your car over every 3 to 4 years. But most people are keeping their cars quite a long time. The average car loan is now 5 years. So say you're going to keep your car through the 5 years and maybe a year after that to have no car payments. You're looking at a car or a truck or a minivan or an SUV that you're going to be living with for 6 or 7 years. So if you buy it this year, you'll have it until 2019 or 2020. So you're making a decision based on what your family needs are, what your personal needs are for the rest of this decade. And that means that you're making a long-term purchase. Now, what they found is that, male buyers, men will basically buy on styling and speed and things like that, but women buy half of all vehicles and they take part in about 80% of car purchases. And their concerns are not only styling and performance, but durability, reliability, that kind of thing. So you have to win on both fronts. You have to win on styling, but you also have to win on reliability and just making this bond with the consumer that they're going to want to have you in the family for the next 7 or 8 years.
And do you think, Mickey, that the recession has changed our thinking about the way that we buy cars? I certainly can remember a time when, people were prone to turn over cars every few years, and the leasing market certainly was much larger than it is right now. Has the recession changed our approach to buying a car?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, first of all, right before the recession, the web had become an incredible shopping tool for the industry. So if you were a car buyer, say, in 2007, 2008, you were doing searches on the web, you were getting information, but what's happened over the last 4 years or so is that people are going on the web, they're relying on chat rooms, they're looking at Twitter, they're looking at message boards. Anytime anything goes wrong with any car anywhere in America, it's going to show
it's
up somewhere
there.
On
yeah.
the web. And another thing to add is that this was the era when Toyota had all the issues with their recalls, and a lot of people discovered the federal government's databases for quality for accidents and things like that. So I think consumers are even smarter now than they used to be, and they're making big decisions based on a lot of uncertainty in the economy. So it isn't as much of an impulse purchase as it might have been for our parents or our grandparents.
Yeah. What about young people, Mickey? What are car makers thinking in terms of trying to reach out to that group?
This is the big question, because I've actually spent a lot of time keeping an eye on people in their teens and 20s and 30s and what their car buying habits are, because I have two nephews, and I've had a lot of conversations with them. One's at Michigan, at University of Michigan, one's in high school. Neither one of them are really focused on buying cars. My nephew, who's at Michigan, is in pre-med, and right now his big concern is being able to pay for medical school.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, multiply that by all the kids who are in school at this point, and what they're basically saying is, you know, I might be able to get away without a car. I might be able to get to age 30 or so without a car. I might buy a used car. I might take the bus. I might use my skateboard or my bike. I might just walk. And so you have a whole generation of people for whom the idea of jumping in the car and going to the beach or you know, having a car to get around town is not a big a deal as it was, you know, for earlier generations. And that's a real challenge for Detroit, for Japan, and for the Europeans.
Hmm. Well, Mickey, in our final 60 seconds here, what's your prognosis for the U.S. auto industry going forward? Do you think the big three will ever return to those glory days of the 90s?
I don't think they'll ever have the giant chunk of market share that they did. And one thing that I would have your listeners do is keep an eye on employment, keep an eye on housing, and keep an eye on consumer confidence. We had really good numbers today on unemployment. Things seem to be turning around a little bit. So if those trends continue, car sales will go up. If we see a reversal in the economy, then you have to be concerned about car sales.
So it sounds like even though things are looking up, that it's a precarious kind of a thing that needs to be watched. We can't make any assumptions just yet anyway.
It's pretty fragile. And I think that there's always going to be hoopla. There's always going to be splash. There's always going to be fun at auto shows. But, you know, underlying all that is a vast amount of Americans who look at cars as big purchases and buy them very carefully.
Mickey Maynard, thank you so much for being with us on Radio Times. Mickey writes for Forbes.com, and we so appreciate it having you with us on Radio Times.
Such a pleasure. Thank you.
Well, we are going to continue to talk about cars. We'll be talking about the Philly Auto Show. Have you been? Are you planning to go this weekend? We'd love to hear from you about that. We'll be talking with a columnist from the Detroit Free Press about what's hot, what's not so hot this year, and the offerings not only from the big three, but from the foreign automakers as well. We'll be kicking the tires when Radio Times comes right back.
Fox Chase Cancer Center supports WHYY. Fox Chase has posted 5-year survival rates for major cancers on its website. Survival rates at Fox Chase are compared to those at community hospitals across the nation. This is but one measure of quality to help you make decisions about cancer care. At Fox Chase, compassionate care is much more than a number. It's part of their mission to prevail over cancer. More at foxchase.org. Fox Chase Cancer Center. Hearts plus minds.
I'm Marty Moscowane. This is the winter membership campaign here at WHYY. We remind you several times a year that if you listen to WHYY, take that next step and become a supporter. We have an ambitious goal, 8,000 pledges, and we can make that goal if you make that call at 1-888-345-9499, or you can pledge online at WHYY.org. Think of what you get on programs like Radio Times, in-depth interviews about local, national, and international news issues and events that matter to you. We also introduce you to interesting people and ideas. We believe that you're the kind of person who is curious about the world we live in. We also know it takes a lot of work to keep up on everything. So we do your homework for you. We track down guests, invite your phone calls to create a lively and informative conversation. You don't hear that on the radio every day. Make a call right now at 1-888-345-9499 or pledge online at WHYY.org. Thanks so much.
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Tracy Matisak, filling in for Marty Moscowane. We're talking about cars today. Specifically, we're talking about the Philly Auto Show. What's hot? What's not so hot? We'd love to hear from you if you've been to the show, if you're planning to go, perhaps what kinds of cars you might be interested in and what you want to see at the auto show. The number is 888-477-9499. And if you haven't been to the auto show, you've got 3 days left to check it out. If you have gone, then you probably know there are lots of new products and trends to explore. Joining us now to sort through the hits, the misses, and even the surprises is someone who, well, let's say he knows a thing or two about car shows. Mark Phelan is an auto critic and columnist for the Detroit Free Press. Mark, welcome to Radio Times.
Thank you, Tracy.
So, I haven't been to the Philly Auto Show, though I am planning to go today, actually, and I've heard that we had the biggest opening here since something like 2004, 71,000 plus people attending that first weekend. Is that what you're seeing as well? Are these auto shows getting bigger, getting more interest this year?
Definitely. At the North American International Auto Show in Detroit a couple of weeks ago, they had the largest attendance since 2005. I think. So it's definitely, you know, supporting the idea that people are a little bit more optimistic about the future. And the car companies, after, at the bottom of the recession, cutting back on the introductions of new cars because they didn't want to spend any of their money to develop a new car if people weren't buying them, now a lot of the cars that they postponed in 2009 and 2010 and 11 are beginning to hit the market, so there's an extraordinary variety of really good, interesting cars in just about every segment of the market.
Hmm. Well, you probably overheard our conversation with Mickey Maynard just a few minutes ago, and we were talking about the big three. They certainly are representing in a big way at the auto shows this year.
It's extraordinary. I mean, they were, you know, Ford and GM in particular were sort of turning the big boats around over the course of several years, but it wasn't all that apparent until, you know, really this year and a little bit last year. There's, you know, some very good stuff. The biggest hit probably of the auto show here in Detroit, and I'd imagine it's getting big crowds in Philadelphia as well, is the replacement for the Ford Fusion. The Fusion is just, it's almost shocking when you look at it and compare it to the current model. And the current model is quite a good car, but the new one is dramatic looking. It's got all kinds of, you know, technology that, you know, is surprising in a vehicle that's, you know, priced like a Ford. It's really, you know, quite impressive. And General Motors is focused down on its key brands, and there's very good, interesting stuff from Cadillac and Buick in particular. And we're seeing the first vehicle that was jointly developed by Fiat and Chrysler, a compact sedan called the Dodge Dart. And this is sort of the test of the theory that Chrysler can go forward and multiply if it's got a partner that has expertise in small cars. And it's quite impressive as well. There's all kinds of good stuff.
Mark, that's an interesting partnership, Chrysler and Fiat, and relatively new. What can you tell us about that and how it's going at this point?
Well, so far it appears to be going very well. And at the depths of the recession, when it became obvious that Chrysler couldn't make it alone, if you were looking around and trying to line up the pieces of the jigsaw puzzle, Fiat and Chrysler fit together. They had the potential to fit together almost perfectly, because Chrysler, very good at, you know, trucks and minivans, things that sell well here, but you can't make a living selling nothing but them. They've got SUVs with Jeep, a very strong brand, but their car lineup was pretty weak, and their small and mid-sized cars, were totally uncompetitive. Fiat, not very good at trucks or you know, big cars or SUVs, but they do small, fuel-efficient cars very, very well. And the two companies don't compete geographically. They don't sell in any of the same markets. So it was really almost a straight case of addition without any questions about how do we avoid avoid competing with ourselves. And thus far, it seems to have gone very well. The development of the new Chryslers, which use a vehicle platform, the basic structure of the car, is shared with Fiat's Alfa Romeo brand. The development of those seems to have gone very quickly, and we're about to have the first one showing up in dealerships in the next few months with the Dodge Dart. It's 40-mile-a-gallon, you know, small car with a price about $16,000 and some pretty impressive technology.
Mark, I don't know if it was one of your pieces that I read, but somewhere I read it, I think it was in Detroit, that there were not pickups in the auto show this year. Is that correct, and is that surprising?
Well, there are still pickups on the stands because car companies sell more pickups, the big three in particular, sell more pickups than they sell of any other individual model. But there's no new pickups, and that is a surprise. It's a demonstration of how the market has evolved and how quickly it's evolved. I mean, there are a lot of people for whom a pickup is a tool, and they need it, and they will always need a pickup, you know, farmers, you know, plumbers, contractors, that kind of thing. But a lot of buyers who were using pickups as personal use vehicles, you know, instead of, you know, a family sedan, have moved away because pickups don't get particularly good fuel economy because they're engineered to do hard work, and also because the quality of the family sedans and compact sedans that were available from the domestics particularly got a lot better. So pickup investment went way down, and car investment boomed.
Well, let's go to the phones, and we'll start off in Sewell and welcome Joe to our conversation. Hi, Joe. Welcome to Radio Times.
Hello. You kind of just answered my question about pickups. I'm actually in the market for a larger pickup, something like a Silverado or a Ford F-150 or a Titan or Tundra. And gas mileage is really the deciding issue as to which pickup I get. Some of the shopping around I've done, the gas mileage is, they're pretty similar. But I wanted to ask your guest, is there one pickup in that class of vehicle that he thinks might be better in gas mileage?
Well, there was an interesting development with that last year. Ford has put a lot of emphasis on an engine technology that uses turbochargers and direct fuel injection. That lets them get more power out of smaller engines. And last year, they added a V6 version of the big F-150 pickup that actually has more power than their V8, but it also gets more fuel, better fuel economy. So that's, at the moment, that's the champion in fuel economy. It's a relatively fine distinction, though. It's only about 1 mile a gallon better than what you'd get in a Silverado or a Dodge Ram. About 1.5 miles, I think, better than a Toyota Tundra. But at the moment, that's the champion. There's some updates coming in the spring to the Dodge Ram. It's getting a new 8-speed transmission, and that will certainly help its fuel economy, too. But right now, I take a look at the Ford F-150 with the EcoBoost engine.
Well, Joe, thank you so much for your call. And for our listeners, if you're in car shopping mode, you've come to the right place. Mark is the guy you want to talk to. The number is 888-477-9499. We're talking with Mark Phelan, who is a columnist and auto critic for the Detroit Free Press. And we're talking about the Philly Auto Show, which wraps up this weekend. So if you're planning to go, you better get there soon. Mark, what about the foreign cars? What did you see that was particularly interesting among the foreign cars at the International Auto Show?
There was an extraordinary variety. One of the most interesting trends that's going on is that Toyota, which sort of dominates the market for hybrid passenger cars with the Prius, they're taking the Prius model and turning it into a sort of a sub-brand of its own. They added a small Prius, you know, minivan-like vehicle at the end of last year, and now at the auto shows they've got a tiny subcompact. It's called the Prius C, C as in Charlie. That's a very small hybrid that they think, you know, will be the first car for some people who don't need a whole lot of carrying capacity. And it's a very interesting vehicle. The luxury brands are back with a vengeance as well. The European companies, because the economy in Europe looks so precarious this year, they're counting on America to be the place where they make most of their money. So BMW has a new version of the 3 Series, which is sort of the iconic sports sedan. Porsche's got a new 911, which, you know, for car fans, that's like Halley's Comet. When a new 911 comes around, you just have to see it. Yes.
Gotta have it.
Yes.
Well, it sounds like there are some interesting and some very expensive trends, and we want to talk about several of them. You mentioned hybrids, and I'm interested to follow up on that. Is the market what it once was for hybrids? I know when gas prices were through the roof, a lot of people were really taking a closer look at those. Are they as popular now as they were at that point?
Close to, but one of the interesting things is that they were never quite as popular as it appeared. I mean, even in the best years, hybrids accounted for maybe 3% of sales of new vehicles. So it was a tiny proportion, but it was a proportion that got a lot of attention because you hear people talking about 50 miles a gallon in city driving, and that gets your attention. There's more hybrids on the market. The Ford Fusion that we were talking about, there's going to be a hybrid version of that that goes on sale later this year. There's lots of hybrids coming from Honda with the new Accord. So a lot of interest in hybrids. What I think is the more significant trend is that technology that started off in hybrids is showing up in cars that aren't sold as hybrids, but it's used to give people better fuel economy. Hmm. The new Chevy Malibu, which should be at the show, they're going to launch with a model that's called the Eco. There's no badge anywhere on it that says hybrid, but basically it's got a sort of a less expensive version of the same technology that's in most hybrids, and it uses that to get 38 miles a gallon in a midsize family sedan. So hybrid technology is sort of working its way into the mainstream, and it's going to be omnipresent soon.
We'll go back to the phones now to Old City, and we'll bring Francis in on our conversation. Hi, Francis.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks.
Good, good. My sons and I went to the car show this past weekend and had a blast, and it was pretty neat to be able to drive a car around inside the Civic Center there, the convention center. I currently have a 2002 Chevy Astro van, which is really neat because you take the back seats out, it's got more space than a regular van. Do they make anything currently like that that I can replace it with, as it's now 10 years old?
Not really. It's interesting. The Astro and the... there was a Ford version of the same sort of van, and I forget what it was called, which is embarrassing to me. But they were sort of the last of the small vans that could also be used for commercial purposes. Now, you're most likely to find is the commercial version of a minivan, which would basically be a minivan with the rear seats taken out.
Right.
It can't carry as much cargo as the Astro because it was designed more for carrying people than for carrying plumbing equipment, for instance. But that's probably the best option. There's also a little, tiny little delivery truck called the Ford Transit Connect that Ford builds in Europe, and small delivery trucks are very common in Europe. They replace things like the Ford Econoline. They fill the niche that a vehicle like the Ford Econoline does in America. That offers probably as much cargo capacity as you're ever going to find in a small vehicle. So that might be worth taking a look at as well.
Well, Francis, thank you for calling in. And we'll go next to Ambler, and we'll welcome Andy to Radio Times. Hi, Andy.
Hello. Hi, I wanted. We were just at the car show a few days ago, and we love the Mini Cooper Countryman, but I just love the Mini Cooper aesthetic. But I was wondering if you have an opinion about the car itself, and also it seems to be a brand of car that has very few dealerships, and if service is likely to be a problem.
I'm crazy about that car, first of all. I'm with you. I love the look of Mini Coopers and the fact that they have such marvelous handling. They're incredibly enjoyable cars to drive. The sort of Mini Cooper Classic, the little one, is a little smaller than, frankly, I would want to live with as my everyday vehicle. And the Countryman comes in and gives you just enough space to carry people and things, and you still have the look and the fun. So I'm a real big fan of the Mini Cooper Countryman. And the dealers, it's interesting. One of the things that they did when they were setting up the Mini business in the United States, they knew that they had a very specialized type of car. So they spaced their dealers pretty widely geographically. So a lot of people end up having to drive some distance to get to their dealer, and that's a real drawback. As far as the quality of the vehicles and the service that the dealers provide once you get there, I've not heard any problems or any complaints about that. Mini owners are among the most dedicated, happy owners that I think you'll find for any brand.
Well, Andy,
okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for your call. Mark, what's the most outrageous car you've seen in terms of either expense or just features, sort of space age? What do you think sort of stood out in your mind?
Well, one of the really interesting things at the auto shows this year is that, probably 7-8 years ago, there was a real sort of a crest in the idea of ultra luxury. You know, luxury for the person for whom a Mercedes-Benz isn't enough. I want something more special because everybody's got a Mercedes-Benz. And Mercedes itself revived a brand that a German brand that had died back during the Great Depression. It was called Maybach. And there was great fanfare around it, and the cars were loaded with technology that you couldn't get in a jetliner, in many cases. And they started, the prices from started around $350,000-$370,000, and they went up from there. And it turned out that there's just not a market for it. And I think it's a real interesting sign of the times that Mercedes, late last year, they said they're just going to let the Maybach brand die again. So if you see a Maybach stand at the auto show, take a look, because it's on the endangered species list and it's on the way out. The other trend that I see is technology. It used to be that luxury brands could be counted on to have the best and most useful technologies first, and that's changing a lot as a lot of customer a sort of connectivity, phone, hands-free phone, iPod, voice recognition, and a lot of safety things like blind spot alert and things to let you know if you're wandering out of your lane. They're moving into the mainstream incredibly quickly, and you can get these things that 3 years ago you couldn't find them on an you couldn't find some of this stuff on an $80,000 luxury car. Now you can get it on a $25,000 family sedan, and that's Ford calls it the democratization of technology, and I think that's a very good term for it.
Well, it sounds like it's a great development for any middle-class buyer who wants, sort of the trappings of a luxury car and all those kinds of technologies that come with it, but doesn't want to shell out, $60,000, $70,000, $100,000 for a luxury vehicle.
Absolutely right. There's, stuff that you can get for less than $30,000 that wasn't available at any price 10 years ago. It's just extraordinary.
In our last, less than a minute here, Mark, what about car makers like Toyota and Nissan? They certainly had difficulties with the earthquake and tsunami in Japan. How are things for them at this point?
Looking up. Last year was a horrifying year for the Japanese car companies. Nissan suffered a little less than Honda and Toyota. Honda and Toyota both think they're going to be able to make up for lost ground this year, and they both need to.
Well, we have so much more to talk about. We're talking with Mark Phelan, and Mark is the auto critic and a columnist for the Detroit Free Press. He has been to a couple of auto shows in his day and has some really interesting things to share with us about what's hot, what's really not so hot this year in cars, what people are looking for. We'd love to hear from you if you're in car shopping mode, if you've been to the Philly Auto Show, which wraps up this weekend, or if you're planning to go, we'd love to hear what you're looking for. The number to call is 888-477-9499. And you're listening to Radio Times.
The Philadelphia Orchestra supports WHYY, a Philadelphia Orchestra showpiece, Rimsky-Korsakov's spectacular Scheherazade, under guest conductor Nicola Luisotti, plus Shostakovich's first violin concerto with Nadia Salerno-Sonnenberg. For your tickets, 215-893-1999, online at philorc.org. This Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at the Kimmel Center, Scheherazade with the Philadelphia Orchestra.
I'm Marty Moscoen. We have an ambitious goal for the winter membership campaign here at WHYY. We need to hear from 8,000 listeners who want to be supporters, members of WHYY. You are one of those 8,000. You're listening to Radio Times, and we thank you for that. Now take that next step. pick up the phone and make a pledge of support right now. That phone number is 1-888-345-9499. You can also pledge online at whyy.org. Why do we want you to do that? Because we depend on listeners just like you for about half of our budget. Our job is to provide good conversations about the important issues of the day, and there is a lot to talk about these days. We also introduce you to interesting people and ideas. We have the time on Radio Times to get beyond the headlines and to go deeper than the sound bites. Pick up that phone, 1-888-345-9499. Pledge online at whyy.org. Thanks so much.
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Tracy Matisak, filling in for Marty Moscowane. We're talking about cars. We're talking about the Philly Auto Show. We'd love to hear from you, to hear your questions about cars or what you thought of the Philly Auto Show. 888-477-9499 is the number to call. We've been talking with Mark Phelan. Mark is the auto critic and a columnist for the Detroit Free Press. And Mark, we've got some folks lined up who want to talk to you, so I'm going right to the phones to Kate May and William. Welcome, William, to Radio Times.
Good morning. Thank you. The question is about four-cylinder, specifically diesel engines in something like a Toyota pickup or a sedan, even, you know, for family use. I was I had to buy a new pickup truck, and my options locally and all up and down the coast was a Dodge Dakota, which averages somewhere between 17 and 20 miles per gallon. And 10 years ago, we had a Volkswagen Golf, which very powerful little turbo four-cylinder diesel, which we got 50 to 55 miles per gallon on, with the added benefit of being able to run vegetable oil with a very small conversion. So I'm wondering why, and many of my contractor buddies are saying, gosh, you know, I wish we had that kind of option. They would just snatch them up if they were available.
Yeah, it's a very interesting question. I mean, diesels are massively popular in Europe. They account for more than half of the new cars sold in Europe. But here in America, they're far less common, and it's largely because, you know, 30 years ago, you know, GM and Ford sold some pretty bad diesels, and people have a long memory if they buy a bad engine. But the diesel technology now is amazing, and it hasn't worked its way into any of the smaller pickups yet. You can get it in the you know, big heavy duty pickups, but you know, then you're talking about a vehicle that's, you know, so big that the fuel economy won't be much better than the Dakota is anyway. There will be a small pickup coming with that we expect a diesel in from GM in a year or so. But you know, for the more immediate, you know, future, the place to look if you want a diesel engine right now is the European brands, because it's one of their core competencies. Volkswagen has got you know, wonderful diesels in the Jetta and the Golf. You can also get diesel versions of some of the European SUVs, things like the Volkswagen Touareg, the BMW X5. But as far as small trucks with diesels, not at the moment. One of the things, everybody who, virtually every automotive writer loves diesels and wish more of them were sold in America, because they're fuel efficient and they're powerful, so they're fun to drive, but they're also economical to run, and that appeals to us. And in the next year or so, we're going to see Chevrolet start to offer one in the Cruze compact car, and the Cruze was one of the surprise hits of last year. It's selling extremely well, and it's a very good little car, real departure for Chevrolet to have such a good small car. And many of us who like diesels are hoping that customers will really warm up to that one, and that will convince other automakers to offer more diesels in the United States. But if you're in a hurry, the place to go is the Europeans, and probably Volkswagen is where I'd look first.
Well, thank you, William, for your call. And we'll go next to Roosevelt, New Jersey, to Meredith. Welcome, Meredith, to Radio Times.
Hi. I have a 2001 Subaru Outback wagon that's got almost 160,000 miles on it, and I love it. It's a 5-speed manual, which I love, but it doesn't hold a lot of little people in the back. I've got two kids. If they each want to have a friend over, I don't have room for them. So I'm looking for something that still has room for all the kids, but I would love to still have a manual transmission. Is there anything out there like that?
Oh, that is a good question. Because for oriented vehicles tend to be lower availability of manual transmissions. I honestly can't think of anything. I mean, if you look at some of the sporty small station wagons, the Volkswagen Jetta station wagon, for instance, that I believe is available with a manual. As far as the smaller SUVs and crossovers, nothing comes to mind. I'm afraid. So I would take a look at the Volkswagen, and if you need something a little bit bigger, perhaps Audi A4. Station wagons, that might be the first place to check.
Thanks, Meredith, for your call. Let's go next to Maryland and Lydia. Hi, Lydia. Lydia, are you with us?
I am here.
Hi there. Welcome to Radio Times.
Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you. Your comment or question for Mark.
Yeah, actually, I just wanted to mention that the Hyundai Santa Fe does come in a stick shift.
Oh, does it still? Thank you.
It does still.
I thought that they had phased that out. Well, in that case, I apologize to the previous listener, and the Santa Fe is a terrific small crossover. I would definitely recommend that.
All right.
So, at any rate, my question is, you've touched on diesels, you've touched on little trucks, but I'm looking for great big trucks. It's something that I can pull a 5-horse, 6-horse trailer with, this sort of thing. I've had many over the years. And they've ranged in gas mileage from a whopping 8 to the gallon to a huge 17. And, one of the biggest problems is that because I'm looking at such big trucks, 1-tons, 454 engines, that sort of thing, they aren't required to report gas mileage.
Right.
And I don't know if they've even done anything to really work on gas mileage for these bigger trucks.
That's a real interesting question, and you're right, because some pickups, when they get big enough, when the gross payload gets big enough, they sort of cross the threshold and are considered commercial vehicles, and commercial vehicles don't have to report fuel economy. So if you're looking at something like a Ford F-250, a Chevy Silverado HD, HD stands for heavy duty, none of them are required to report their fuel economy. The best way to make sure that you're getting the best possible fuel economy in that kind of vehicle is to go with the diesel engine. And Ford and Chevrolet and Dodge all offer very good diesels in their big pickups. Unfortunately, the Toyota Tundra doesn't yet. That's one of the things that has sort of restrained Tundra sales. I would also recommend that you take a look at the towing capacity of some of the light full-size pickups, though. The Ford F-150 that I was talking about a couple of minutes ago, the towing capacities for the light trucks have increased pretty steadily over the last few years, so it's possible that there might be an F-150 or a Silverado or a light-duty Tundra that would be able to tow as much as you need it, because I think all of those are up around 12 to 13,000 pound towing capacity now, and that might get you into a class of vehicle that would get better fuel economy.
Well, that may be the case, but I do still need a bigger truck, because
mm-hmm.
when you're hauling on the highway and you have a trailer that large and you have a truck that isn't long enough or big enough, you can have problems with wind and with not being able to brake and this sort of thing. You need, I need at least a 3/4 ton or preferably a 1-ton truck.
Absolutely, and one of the things that I would strongly recommend with whatever truck you ended up getting, all of the manufacturers have got systems that they call trailer sway control or some name like that, and that basically hooks the trailer braking control into the electronics that run the anti-lock brakes and the stability control for the truck, and that makes towing a big truck much less challenging. Sorry, towing a big trailer much less challenging and considerably safer.
Well, Lydia, thank you so much for your call. You certainly have called the right place. I'm Tracy Matisak in for Marty Moskowane. You're listening to Radio Times on.
Okay, coming up in the second hour of the program, something completely different. We're going to have a ukulele concert, Dave Davies, with Jake Shimabukuro. This is a repeat broadcast of an earlier show with Marty, so stay tuned for that coming up soon. But right now, before you do another thing, in honor of Terry Gross, And for that matter, in honor of Dave Davies, as far as I'm concerned, who's sitting in with us, I urge you to give us a call at this toll-free number, which is 1-888-345-9499, toll-free, one more time, 1-888-345-WHYY. And in honor of this program, which we have just heard, but something more, Dave, I think is going on here. This is the 25th anniversary year of Radio Times, and I cannot think of a better reason to call in honor of this great program, which is one of the best programs on the air of the Delaware Valley. You know that. In honor of that august anniversary, why not call and make a pledge in honor of Terry, but Marty, call us now, 1-888-345-9499. Make that membership pledge.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting when you think back of over 20 years. It's if you there listening, probably you've been tuning into Marty for maybe half of that or more. Mm-hmm. Think about how many of those years you have pledged to WHYY. If you have every year or most of them, thank you so much. I think most of us probably do a little less than we should or could when it comes to supporting, you know, institutions that we appreciate and value. And I want you to urge you not to take this one for granted and to make that call, go to the web, make that pledge. We really count on it, particularly in the middle of a drive like this where it can get a little slow, yeah. And we need that little boost. Right. You know, Ed mentioned this morning that Jake Shimabukuro is going to be giving us this ukulele performance, and I could hear some of you thinking, what, are you kidding me?
Don't think that.
But, if you've listened long enough, you have a little bit of faith that if Marty thinks it's worth it, it probably is, and I am told this is one of her favorite interviews. Ukulele doesn't begin to describe what you're going to hear. I mean, he is not some sleepy Hawaiian strummer. He does all kinds of...
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Not that there's anything wrong with that, but this is wild, and he is back here a second time for a reason. You will enjoy it, and it's an example of the kind of diversity you hear this morning. I'm not a gearhead. I didn't go to the auto show, but that was an interesting conversation this morning.
Well, it was so interesting, Dave, because it kind of combined the macroeconomic view of what's going on with the U.S. auto industry, and hopefully it's coming back to life, it seems to be. But at the same time, it added a touch of car talk with some good advice, maybe without the wackiness of car talk, but everything else. But so it was a fact. And when you can have somebody of the excellence of Tracy Matisak stepping in when Marty's off and you don't miss a beat, well, you've got something special. And that's what we're celebrating, 25 years of Radio Times with your help at 1-888-345-9499. And Dave, of course, this is a big, we find that as we get past the morning rush, it gets into a big online time too. And that's when folks dial us up at whyy.org. So you could do that. And you know, one thing we just kind of found out by accident, Dave, this week. It's amazing. One of our more venerable gifts that we have offered, I know we've been offering versions of it for 20 years, because I can remember when they first brought it in, the WHYY travel mug. Now, things come and go, but I tell you what, the joy of not spilling your coffee or tea in your car all over your brand new suit, that is something that goes on forever. Believe me, if you can take it from a spiller like me, that's an important deal to have. So if you would like to have it, oh, it's a beauty. It's got a silver side. It's got our logo on it. Fits right into the cup holder. And it's yours for a $60 pledge, $5 a month if you want to go that route. Why not call in honor of our discussion of the automobile industry and Radio Times? You can get the WHYY Silver Bullet Travel Mug for a pledge of $60 right now, 1-888-345-9499, online, whyy.org.
Yeah, a gift that fits so perfectly with the discussion of auto design, isn't it? Ed, there was a stirring performance this morning by Morning Edition listeners when we had that terrific challenge grant.
Yes.
And it was like a football game where you're behind in the third quarter, you're behind as the fourth quarter begins, and then there's this terrific rush at the end, which allowed us to meet that challenge grant and keep the momentum towards the goals that we seek. We'd like to get that from our loyal Radio Times listeners. You know, I know this is a special community, those of you who have time to be around the radio right now. It's a particular community, and you appreciate what the story does, you know, what the producers of the program do. You know, Ed mentioned that in the show that we just heard, we had the kind of macroeconomic view of what happened with the auto industry and the bailouts, and then those wonderfully kind of specific questions right. about the Mini Cooper and diesel engines. Yeah. And that doesn't just happen. That's because there are skilled, experienced producers that work on the show day in and day out, getting great ideas and then finding just the perfect guests, and then having a pro like Tracy Matisak right. to step in. I knew Tracy 20 years ago. We worked together at KYW News Radio. She was a rising star then and is an established, credible voice in the region now. This is what a real professional organization do. There was a day, you and I know, Ed, when public radio had some rough edges and things were a little thinner than they are now. We're very proud of the fact that we've got a really robust organization with good, solid professional producers, hosts, and it doesn't come for free.
And it doesn't, and it shouldn't, because good things cost money to produce. It's just like anything else in life. The one thing that is different with this model is we kind of do it on the honor system. I mean, I love my cable subscription, and that's lovely, but there's no honor system involved there. If you don't, if you choose not to pay your monthly cable bill, they will choose to shut you off. But that's not the way it works here. Our model is to present the case as honestly as we can, and yes, we will be here tomorrow, and yes, you will get WHYY if you choose not to become a member, but I promise you this, it will not be as good as it can be if you don't choose to join us. I have been around here long enough to remember when professionals like Marty and Tracy and Dave Davies, for that matter, we simply couldn't afford them. But as the station has grown over the years, the result is what you hear every day, and we should all be very proud of it. So in honor, once again, of Radio Times' 25th anniversary year, why not, as a gift to Marty, to say thank you for your silver anniversary on the air, here's a pledge. 1-888-345-9499, online, whyy.org. And for that matter, in honor of Dave Davies, our senior reporter, because on a more recent basis, you know that in the midst of this worst economic downturn that any of us has ever seen in our lifetimes, somehow WHYY has expanded its news and analysis with NewsWorks at NewsWorks Tonight. Dave is right in the thick of it, and we should be proud of that, too. Another reason to call, 1-888-345-9499. Dave, I know you wouldn't say it, so I will.
Well, I appreciate that, Ed. And you know, we're going to be going back to National Public Radio's news and then the second hour of